Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show, and it's a special edition because we're coming to you from the Pinnacle Complex where Sporting Kansas City train and operate on a daily basis, because it's been a pretty exciting day here today as Sporting Kansas City announced the acquisition of a new player, but he's also an old player at the same time. An old friend, Christian Namath, was reintroduced here today. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by Carter Augustine. We've been out here for all the festivities today, Carter, and it's been a pretty fun one having a chance to talk with Christian Namath as he makes his way back to Kansas City after they acquired him in a trade with the New England Revolution yesterday.
Yeah, there's a good buzz around the training center and a lot of media out today, which is a good sign. And I think that's just indicative of how excited a lot of people are for his return to Kansas City. And you know, he was a big fan favorite as well. Hasn't gone the way he would have liked, I don't think, the past couple of years, but I don't think that's going to deter any of these fans from being excited to see him again. And you get that sense around the building here that the team is excited as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we all remember, media, fans, everyone, is what happened here. Yeah. Because we don't watch day in and day out what happened in Qatar or what happened in New England. We watch those games with a very vested interest, and we saw some amazing moments from Christian Namath in 2015. So we're hoping we see more of them here again this year. We're going to get more to Christian in just a moment. We're going to break down the trade for you and talk about what maybe Peter Vermees had to say at the news conference today. And we're going to have an interview. Carter and I are going to have an interview with Christian Namath coming up a little bit later in the show as well. But I think we also need to talk about what happened last weekend. Maybe just as big for the franchise, a massive win over the Houston Dynamo, which at the time took Sporting Kansas City from fifth place up to second place. After the results for the entire weekend shook out, Sporting are 1 point behind second place Portland right now and in a tie in third place with LAFC. The tiebreaker does go to Sporting Kansas City now. But just to snap that winless stretch, to get a victory, the way that it all shook out. Carter, you were on the sidelines for it. What stood out to you by the performance for Sporting Kansas City on Saturday?
It was such a professional performance for me. And what stood out to me most is that the game really devolved into, it's a little bit of a rivalry game. And I think that's starting to get renewed a little bit because you could tell these two teams have a little bit of animosity towards each other. And then the way that the refereeing decisions went, Houston feels like they have a chip on their shoulder over the past couple of weeks. And I think that really factored into their reaction. And so they became really aggressive, really frustrated, arguing everything, and really trying to bait Sporting players into reactions the entire time. And so for me, I think it was a really professional result to go in there, get the 1-0. The clean sheet is really impressive despite the 10 men, and I guess it wound up with 8 men, but for the majority of the game, the 10 men. And then just that one moment of class to turn that in from a point to 3 on the road. And like you said, it's such a huge result in terms of this point in the season. And I think it can really get them momentum going here into a really big month of August.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, they needed it in a big way. To go back to your point about the emotional maturity of the team in this one, yeah, there was a lot of baggage that Houston brought to the table in this game because of how harshly they felt they were treated in their last home game. And I think they let that spill into the way they performed in this game, which in the end, you know, the old adage is you don't want to let one loss become two. Well, they let one bad refereeing decision get into their head and then carry them into this next game.
Yeah, they into the next game now.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right, because they're going to have three guys suspended plus their manager. Yeah. So they've got all kinds of issues that they've got to deal with in addition to a midweek Open Cup semifinal as well. Maybe in some ways that makes it easier for Wilmer Cabrera because he knows he can start all those guys on Wednesday because they're going to get the day off coming up next weekend. But from Sporting side of things, you know, on my morning show on the Border Patrol this morning, Peter Vermees talked about the performance by Gianluca Busio, and he pointed out something I was actually thinking about asking you about anyway, which was he felt like the Dynamo players were targeting him a little bit. Hey, there's a 16 draw here. Let's send a couple of messages early. Well, they tried to send one of those messages, and it got one of their own players sent off, and that changed the entire game, I thought.
Yeah, and I don't think you can blame Houston for going into the game with that game plan.
Right.
Leave a foot in on this young kid, see how he reacts. Mm-hmm. The problem is they took it way too far. I mean, that was just a really stupid challenge.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe if he doesn't hit Busio's head, you know, if he's just leaving it in on his back, it's a yellow card, and that's the intended message, and you see how he picks himself up off the turf. But yeah, you're right, I'm glad Vermees said it, because yeah, being there definitely seemed like a point of emphasis for them to leave a few challenges in on the youngster. But he responded so well, didn't he? I mean, he did the entire game.
Yeah, and when we did the Drive Time episode that week leading up to it, I asked him about his coolness on the field, not realizing that it would come into play the way that it did in this game. But he said, look, I grew up going to Italy with my father, and Andrea Pirlo was always the guy that I looked to, and he was always so cool and calm and collected on the field. Boy, he showed it, like you said, because that was a game where people were losing their minds left and right. And I don't remember even the slightest bit of emotion being shown from Busio in terms of him losing control of himself.
Yeah, and he grew into the game instead of wilting, as maybe Houston was trying to get him to do as a young kid, and with leaving in some physical challenges. So I give full credit to him for a wonderful performance on his full MLS debut, and you would think that is a sign of good things to come from that kid.
Okay, another one of the big developments in that game was he had the assist. It was a great play by Busio, but also Diego Rubio, super sub again. The stat was pointed out to me that he does not have a single shot in a game that he has started. But when he comes off the bench, he's got 4 goals, which is the most of any player coming off the bench in MLS this season. And they've all been big ones. What gives? I mean, how do we process the season that Diego Rubio is having right now?
I don't know how to process it. Yeah, it's the shot thing is weird for me, because you would think with the more minutes he gets, there'd be opportunities for him to get those shots away. But I think when we heard from Peter Vermees at halftime on the TV broadcast, when I asked him about Quaze, and he kind of intimated that the way we came into the game and set up and how we were going to play with Quaze up top is completely changed in the, what was that, 13th minute or whatever,
yeah,
it was,
14th, with, yeah,
where the sending off. And so at that point, Houston really did drop off a bit deeper, just kind of left that front three up top by themselves and withdrew a lot deeper into their own half. And so that game, it kind of opened up for a guy like Rubio to come in and make a difference off the bench. I can't explain this season of his, but you have to give him full credit for that finish, because yeah, deservedly so. Busio's getting a lot of credit for the pass, because it was a fantastic turn and a little flick over the top, but the first touch is perfect from Rubio, and then he buries it into the corner. And so, like you said, they all seem to have been huge goals as well. So he's turning out to have a knack for the moment in this season, and it came up big again, because for a long time there, it looked like this might be a nil-nil.
I there's a little theory I have, and I'll just throw it at you. You tell me what you think of it. When he comes in those games that he scored the goals, the team needs a goal in those situations. It's late in the game, and there's no mistake in what the objective is. Sporting Kansas City are throwing numbers forward in those times. They're looking to score. The job of being a number 9 for Sporting, oftentimes, there are so many other parts to the job, and he does seem to take those jobs to heart. I just wonder if the difference is when he comes into those other games late, yes, those other things still matter, but there's one job. Go score goals. He seems to be able to find, especially in tight spaces, because the other teams are bunkered in as well. He has a knack for navigating through those tight spaces to score those goals.
Yeah, he does. Got quick feet in and around the box, and maybe there is something to that. I don't know. It seems like he can get dragged away from the from the box at times, because he's so eager to get involved in the buildup, and he's pressing everywhere. That maybe, yeah, in these late game situations, where especially in the Houston game, I mean, he was just pretty much in and around the box, because that's how deep their line was set, and that's how much possession in the attacking third Sporting had, that he was just kind of in and around the box. And you're right, it seems like his best quality is the ability to quickly interchange passes with guys right around the box.
Yeah.
Quick little 1-2s. And
I mean, off the top of my head, all 4 of the goals have come that way, right? With some quick combinations. And sometimes it's him getting it, giving it, and then getting it back. But I feel like that's how all 4 of the goals have come.
Yeah. Yep. And in and around the box. And maybe he'll take something away from that Houston game and say, hey, maybe I should try and camp myself around the box a little bit more, because it certainly does pay dividends at times.
Well, the dynamic of that position, the number nine for Sporting Kansas City, has just had a big change because Christian Namath, as we mentioned at the start of the show, has been brought into the fold. I think they say oftentimes that the best time to make an acquisition is right after a win. The team's already starting to feel a little bit of a bounce, and then this is that added juice to go into the rest of the season here. But it does make it interesting. You add Christian Namath's name as a number nine. You were the one that pointed out to me, Carter, people are questioning, okay, he played a lot on the wing when he had so much success for Sporting KC last time around, but we did get a glimpse or two of him as a number nine, and it was something that really impressed you, I think.
Yeah, there's a couple of game stretch that year where Dwyer, I think, was suspended maybe, but he missed a couple of games. Mm-hmm. And so Namath got the start up top, and the game in particular that sticks out to me is the FC Dallas game. Yeah. Where he had Graham Zusi on one wing and Connor Hallisey on the other wing. But in that game, he was an absolute menace to Zach Lloyd and Matt Hedges. And next season, Matt Hedges was Defender of the Year. It was more so Lloyd. I mean, he was just destroying Zach Lloyd in that game.
Didn't he get one of them sent off, if I remember?
He got Zach Lloyd sent off. I want to say he got both yellow cards on Lloyd. Mm-hmm. He definitely got the second yellow card. But throughout that game, it was interesting because Peter Vermes has talked about that in the press conference today, in your interview on Border Patrol this morning. The qualities that he has in that role, they were on full display. He would run the channels for long balls into the gaps, and so that would stretch the center backs out into positions that they didn't want to be. But he also was posting up and turning those guys with little effort. I mean, it was fantastic, and it's a really small sample size, but I think that he'll definitely remember that game and how he fit into this role. And I'm curious if maybe that gave Peter a little bit more confidence as well. He knows he can get goals from the wing with Namath, but there was that game where he was really fantastic against FC Dallas.
Well, his jersey number has been revealed again. He wore number nine last time around. That number was vacant, and he's got it again. There's no question that that's how he sees himself. We're going to ask Christian about that in the next segment of this show, but I think it is going to be fascinating to see when you list off the two names that were playing on the wings there, and this is not to disrespect Graham Zusi whatsoever. He's obviously a tremendous player, designated player, level player, but he's playing it right back now. Daniel Shallowy is playing in that position. He's got seven goals and, what, six or seven assists on the year. Johnny Russell's on that other wing, and Gerso is a weapon on those wings as well. You know, Connor Hallisey, you know, had a brief stint here. I don't think anybody would put him in those categories. It's going to be really interesting, isn't it, to see having a guy like Christian Namath in the middle with that type of a potent attack on the wings as well.
Yeah, that's exactly why I mentioned Connor Hallisey, because I'm not trying to take a dig at the guy, but right. He just wasn't up to MLS standard, and I think that's just been proven. And so, yeah, to see him play up in that position with players like Johnny Russell and Daniel Shallowy around him, I think I'm excited to see what he can do with that. And one thing that we haven't seen from that number nine position is the guy creating his own shot and scoring, you know. And we talked about Rubio getting up involved in and around the box, but there's sometimes where we saw Christian Namath, the ability to one touch bang from the outside of the box or cut past a defender and make a play himself. And so I think he brings that. If he can refine that form that he had with Sporting Kansas City, that is a quality that he brings that's just a little bit different. And you brought up a point, Nate, about the timing of the move. I think that's a really good point. After the win, it seems like the team was already buzzing, and this has kind of contributed to the buzz. Mm-hmm. But also just the timing at the end of the transfer window, where I think it's just savvy business by the club in just waiting on New England. All the signs, I mean, from preseason, when we were down there in Tucson and New England was down there, there were signs down at that time was, will Namath fit into the squad here? And it's just kind of been growing all season. He hasn't been playing, and so they waited just long enough, and I think they got a good deal at the end of it as well.
Well, I think that one of the things that Peter Vermes, when he puts on the technical director hat, has shown a remarkable ability for is buying low and selling high. He sold high on Namath the first. He bought low on Namath the first time around. He was out of contract and looking for an opportunity. He brought him here, and he had that tremendous season in 2015. He sold him high, made what, I think $1.5 million to $2 million by selling him at that time. Now he's buying him low again because, like you said, the fit wasn't right in New England. New England wasn't getting out of him what they had hoped. They're getting him for a fraction of what New England paid at the time. So that's one of the things. And Peter Vermes did the same thing, obviously, with Dom Dwyer a year ago. And look, I think especially in a mid-market team like Kansas City, those types of savvy transactions are incredibly important to make. And I think it's going to be fascinating, Carter, because you mentioned some of his qualities, the things that stand out. And we'll finish this segment with this maybe. I'll give my long-winded answer first. It gives you the opportunity to think of yours. It was fun watching the highlights back of what Namath did this first time around. So many memories that stick out to me. You know, your point about the FC Dallas game is spot on. I mean, that showed his ability to play with his back to a defender and his knack for knowing which way to turn when he's in a situation like that. Everybody's going to remember the Portland goal. But for me, the most special moment that he had, I care about trophies. That's for me as a fan, I want to see my team win trophies. Those are the moments that you never forget. The goal he scored in Philadelphia was the type of quality that I don't know how many players we see with, which was cutting across the box, first time, impeccable technique. Makes it look easy. Side foot, curls it into the side netting. No goalkeeper has a chance to save it. And he had a few goals like that where it was taken first time. Maybe it doesn't look like the hardest goal in the world, but it's the technique. If he can score some of those goals for this team, I think you put him right there with Rubio as a finisher in that regard. And that's maybe what I remember the most. What's your best memory of Christian Namath? What do you remember the most about his first time in 2015?
Yeah, I mean, that goal is, I think, the biggest one because it – Like you said, it's about trophies. And in that game, it was coming to the point of the game where it was starting to get really tense. Yeah. Because they were searching for that equalizer, and it was really a question of, you know, where are they going to get this? Because they weren't banging the door down at that time against in Philadelphia. So for him to pop up with that individual moment of quality, it was a really tight angle. And to just, like you said, the technique to just curl it right where he wanted to. That's what stands out for me. And I said it earlier, he just has that ability to, at times, he can make a goal by himself. And you know, Portland is an outlier even in that respect, because you're not going to expect him to pull one of those goals out again. But he's got that quality, and it's in and around the box, one touch, and he can create some space. And we've seen that from Daniel Shalvey. Actually, like, the goal against Philadelphia reminds me of Daniel Shalvey's form this year. He loves cutting in from the left and curling those. And he's got that technique as well, but so does Namath. And so that's what stands out to me. He's got that ability to be a game changer.
I'll add one thing to that goal of the year one in Portland you mentioned too, is go back and look at the people that he was putting on the turf. We're talking about some of the better defensive midfielders and defenders in the league.
Chara twice, right?
Yeah, Diego Chara, Nat Borchers, I think, once or twice, and Liam Ridgewell all got turned on that play. Those are big names in this league, and it was pretty fun. Hopefully we see some moments like that coming up.
Well, that was another game. That's a 1-0, and that's a result in Portland. And it's just that's the thing that people have been talking about. The club has been scoring a lot of goals this year. They have, and they're on a record pace for their club. But when you put a player up top that can be a game changer, I think that might be just a little bit of a difference in what they're bringing in with Namath.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the league right now. You have to score goals in this league the way it's constructed to win games, and you might have to score a lot of them sometimes, because we've talked about Sporting's on pace to set a record for goals scored in a season for the franchise. They're like fifth in the league in goals scored, you know, which is still not bad, but the point is there's room for improvement there. Yes, they need to shore up defense and all that, but an extra goal here or there in some of these games this year could be the difference in finishing in first place or finishing in fourth place or out of the playoffs altogether. So those goals can all matter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with the man himself, Christian Namath, joining us. We're at Pinnacle for the Sporting Kansas City show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati and Carter Augustine with you on what's been a special day for Sporting Kansas City, as it's a welcome home for a guy who was a real fan favorite his first time around and probably will be again. Christian Namath was introduced at a press conference today, and he's joining us on the show now. Christian, welcome back to Kansas City. How does it feel to be back in a Sporting Kansas City shirt today?
Yeah, I'm so happy, excited. And first of all, I miss you. I miss your voice. Always in my your voice. I miss it. So I'm happy to see you and all the guys here.
Well, my voice misses getting to call some fantastic goals that you scored your first time around. I think we all remember the one in Portland, but I think the one that stands out to me the most was the one in Philadelphia, because that helped this team win a trophy. When you look back on your first season, maybe what are some of the best memories that you have?
Yeah, for me also, the Cup game was like especially that weather conditions, and we won the Cup, so it was I think one of the best moments here. And then I scored a couple of nice goals, but always the most important, the team, and we won that Cup, so for me also that moment was the special one.
After these couple of years away, what's your relationship like with Peter Vermees coming back here, the manager that he brought you back in?
I think it's gonna be better than before, to be honest. It's. I think what happened is happened, and this make this relationship stronger. I believe it. So I'm excited to work with him again.
Why do you think things worked so well between you and Peter and the team your first time around?
What I said before, like that's how a Sporting plays, is totally fits on me and. And also the whole organization to play in that stadium in front of that fans, this makes me maybe 20% more what I have. So all these things what I had at that time, I think it's just work together, and that's my main target to do it again.
When you were here, you played mostly on the wing, but we've heard that they might be looking for you to play a little bit more down the center this time. You did have a couple games playing up top. I remember that FC Dallas game where you started up top. Does that give you any more confidence that you can play in that position in this team?
I was always thinking like to play there, but I know that time Dan was the number one there, and I think that three in the front, how we played, it were together. So it was no question who played in that time in the front. So, but I knew my position and always want to, in my mind, try myself in Sporting number nine and show my qualities there. I had one or two games, I think was really good. So, and it works. So I hope now I'm coming back I heard we have different players, different styles, so I'm excited to be on the pitch with them.
We're visiting with Christian Namath. You've mentioned a couple of times here today at the press conference and just now that you like playing the number nine. Why? What do you like about that position?
You are more closer to the goal, and probably I score more goals than before. So, and that's how I grew up, in that position, so that was in my mind. Never a question about what my position, just how time goes. The coaches use me different positions, and I try to learn that positions, and that's why I played here left winger. But before, I played number nine all the time.
You talked about in the press conference that still a lot of the players are still here that were here when you were in Sporting the first time around. I'm wondering, have you gotten a chance to talk with them, and maybe especially Graham Zusi after your return to Children's Mercy Park last time around with the Revolution?
Yeah, that's crazy. Everybody think it was personal or something. It just happened in the game, in the very bad situation, unlucky situation. And since that, I met him before, like this winter time, was that preseason?
Sure.
That time we just joke about it. So I don't think I heard he tweeted about it.
Yeah, he had a good tweet.
Yeah, he's a good call, so I have to call him.
So there's nothing personal there.
No, nothing. Can be. We'll see.
we have Christian Namath here. Hey, one of the things I asked you about earlier today too is this is your first time in this new complex, correct?
Yes, correct. It's unbelievable. What I said also in the press conference, like a small kid who wants to try everything, to see everything, what's new, you know, like unbelievable this place. So congrats who make this thing happen.
Had you heard anything about the facility before you got here?
I heard about it, and I actually talked with Daniel about it. So to be here now, I'm excited and just unbelievable. It's so, last 2 days was so quick and things happened quickly. So to be here now, it's unbelievable and so happy.
Speaking of Daniel, you had a nice little anecdote about showing him the dressing room at Children's Mercy Park the first time. Is it kind of a switcheroo here now? Is he going to show you around Pinnacle? Are you looking forward to playing with him now that he's no longer in the academy in the first team?
Exactly. He's the guy now. I'm happy for him. He scored goals, so I'm really happy how he's doing his things here. And I think he's going to improve and learn and all these things. And, of course, I try to help him too.
You get to finally start training with the team now too. How excited are you to just get back on the field with these guys?
Yeah, I miss it, to be honest. So I can't wait tomorrow to be on the field and train with them, and then slowly to play games with them. So, and the feeling, you know, like to play a home game, that's the biggest part what I miss. Yeah. So I can't wait to just play at home.
Well, you got to wait 1 week, and up versus LAFC. We heard from Peter Vermees that he thinks you'll be in contention to be involved in that game. What do you... You got to hit the ground running here against a really difficult team out west. Have you gotten a chance to think about that game at all yet? Or are you still kind of fresh off the plane here?
To be honest, I just slept 3 hours, so I don't I don't think about the weekend. But slowly, for sure, I will. And then, it's a tough 11 games coming to us. But I think we don't have to scare to no one. And Even if we play in LA now, and I think we have chance to win that game, and we have to go there with confidence.
Finally, Christian, you are back in Kansas City. Off of the field, is there anything like a restaurant, a favorite restaurant or place to eat, or anything that you're looking forward to seeing again now that you're back here?
Of course, barbecue, never forget. So we're planning with my fiance to go there direct.
Fiance, when did you get engaged?
I don't want to say that.
I don't want to say. A long time ago. Okay, so that was you. Okay, so a new development. She's excited to get some barbecue with you too.
Yeah, she was with me last time, so she loved this place as well. So for sure, the first place where we go for barbecue.
Great. Well, Christian, welcome back. We're very excited to have you here, and good luck with the team.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is Christian Namath, and we'll take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks, man. All right, back on the Sporting Kansas City show, and we thank Christian Namath for joining us in the last segment, and we go right from one big name to another as we're now joined by Gianluca Busio. Man, what a week it's been for you, dude. I mean, you get to sit down with me and drive a car, and then you get to an assist in your first ever MLS start. Where would you rank those two things in terms of just like, you know, career milestones?
I say they're pretty close.
Yeah,
I think the first assist edges out just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But the drive time was definitely fun.
I'm hurt. That hurts a little bit. That hurts, but I'll take it. It was a game winning assist too. Yeah. Let's talk about it right away. Just tell me about what was going through your mind as you went out on the field on the road, knowing, hey, this is my first ever MLS start.
I think it hit me more when I was just walking out on the field, you know, with the little kids and seeing the other team. I was like, this is the real deal. Like, this is the actual professional match and everything. So you can see I was smiling a little bit walking out. But yeah, I mean, after that, it felt like a regular game to me. I didn't really pay attention to the fans that much. It was just our team against their team. And that's how I tried to play throughout the whole game. And I think it worked out pretty well. I tried just treat it as another game like I always do, and yeah, I mean, just still a great feeling. Like watching it back after, I think I look at it now and say like, wow, I really did that. But on the field, it's, you know, I try my best not to think what, you know, what's how big of an occasion it is.
What did the coaching staff talk with you maybe in the week leading up to the game and before the game, and what were their instructions for you knowing that you were going to get that first start?
Yeah, it was basically stuff just being confident and, you know, being good on the ball, clean. And but yeah, they were telling me that they had confidence in me and they trusted me to, you know, put me out there in a real MLS league match. So that right there showed, you know, made me, you know, more happy and confident that they're trusting me to put me out there in a real game. So yeah, but Mason was same old stuff about being confident, good on the ball, and yeah, just play your game because they know what I can do when I'm playing my best game. So yeah, just confident on the ball mainly.
Okay, you were the victim on the red card challenge that changed the whole game there. 14 minutes in, you got that shoulder to the back of the head. Did you feel like the Houston players were trying to maybe send a message to you? Did you get any sense that they were trying, hey, we got the kid out here, let's leave something on him?
Not really. I don't think, well, I mean, even if they were, I don't know. But I didn't really, I'm used to it, I guess. I'm used to getting, you know, kicked a lot in national team games. And I've been playing for a couple months now with USL. And it happens a lot. I mean, I feel like the way I play would probably cause some people to hit me more. Just, you know, I try to be smooth on the ball and I play quick. So, you know, I think throughout my whole career, I'm pretty sure I'll get kicked a lot. So I don't really feel like it's targeting. And if I do feel like, it is targeting, I feel like that's going to get me off my game. And I know that's what they're trying to do. So if I give it any, you know, attention, then it's going to put me off my game. So I try to just to, you know, every game, if I do get kicked and, you know, I think they're playing a little dirty, then I'm just going to, you know, keep on trying to play my game and outplay them with my feet instead of trying to get them, you know, play dirty and stuff like that. But I don't think it was anything that I haven't, you know, been through before. I don't think it was anything that bad and, you know, straight direct at me. So, no. Nah.
But you stayed calm, and a lot of people on that field did not. there were three people set off for Houston, plus their manager. There were cards being handed out left and right. Where did you get that? Did somebody teach you that growing up, how to stay emotionally composed through the course of a game, or is that just something you figured out on your own?
I think it's more something I figured out on my own. I really just want to play. I don't really care about all that outside, you know, all the pushing and shoving. Now, if it comes to it, you know, it's going to happen. You have to do it every once in a while just to let the ref know and stuff like that. But, yeah, I try not to. I think I've, you know, from watching other players, they get off their game when they do get, you know, when people start kicking them more and they get mad, they start yelling and pushing. That's when they don't get on their game, and that's what the other team wants. So I've learned that, you know, from my younger days, then that they're going to try that. You're one of the better players, so they're going to have to try to get you off your game one way or another. And if that one way is kicking you and pushing you and all that, then you don't want to fall into their trap. So I just try to stay on my game no matter what happens. And yeah, just try to be calm still and try to keep my head. And I think I'm pretty good at keeping my head throughout my whole career, really.
Not only you, but the whole of your team, Sporting KC, were able to keep their head when, like you said, it looked like Houston was trying to get you guys off their game, especially after they went down to 10 men. Has that been a focus for the team this year? Because this is the second game in which this has happened, three players sent off for the other team.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like our team did a great job on that. I mean, we kept our emotions, you know, in ourselves, and we really just wanted to get out there with 3 points, and that's what we did. You know, we knew that going in there after that red card, we knew it was going to be a battle and that they were going to want to, you know, be a little chippy and all that stuff just to get us off our game. Like, because, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to win with 10 men. It's going to be harder for them. So for them to, you know, slow the game down, kick us more, foul us, that's what we knew that was coming. But, you know, we all did a good job at, you know, managing the game, managing ourselves. And, you know, nobody really got caught up into it. And I think that's just has to do a lot with the veterans on the team, like Bees, Ike, all of them, Tim, all the veterans on the team. You know, they can control some of the, you know, either newer guys or who have a bigger attitude, stuff like that. And they did a really, really good job at, you know, keeping the game to play soccer. And Houston can do what they want to do, but we were going to stick to our game, and I thought we did a really good job with that.
All right, let's get to the assist. I know you've talked about it a lot, but we went back and we watched it. And one of the things that stood out to me is, first of all, you found a little pocket of space to make yourself available to Graham to play you the ball in the first place. But we noticed you looked over both shoulders right before the ball came to you. Tell me what you're looking for. What are you checking? What's going through your mind as you're getting yourself into that position?
When I try to find those little pockets, I feel like I can – you know, be creative when I find, you know, tiny pockets that the defense, you know, soft spots in the defense stuff. But I'm just looking for anything that can either create a goal or that I can do the goal. So I'm going to keep on looking because, let's say on the assist I got, I mean, Diego was there, but if there were three guys on him, I would have to find another option to do. And if that's turn with me, I would know that I could turn because I've looked both ways to check. So I always have, you know, another option because if that option's not there, then I can turn and play around other way. So, yeah, I'm always looking, or I try to always look. Sometimes I may not and lose the ball, but that's going to happen. So, but, yeah, I'm always trying to look and always moving because, you know, the defenders are, it's gonna be a lot harder to mark you when you're moving. So yeah, and if I know where they are, then I feel like I'm ahead of them. So if I know what they're, which way they're facing, all that kind of stuff, then I know that, you know, I have the edge on them. So if I know they're looking that way, I can go that way and they won't see me. So if I keep on looking, I'll know what they have to do and what they're gonna do. So I just always look to try to find, you know, little weaknesses and find my teammates running on, because I know if I get in those pockets and space that they'll find me. My teammates are good enough to find me, and from there I'll try to create for, you know, other players and hopefully score.
On the back of that, you kind of had to adjust because of the sending off, maybe how you guys were gonna play as a player. How is it like to adjust to that? And then maybe also, you come into the game with Quaze up top and maybe some different directives, and then Diego Rubio replaces him as Houston is dropping deeper and deeper in that game. What's it like to make those adjustments on the fly?
Making those adjustments always, I guess, somewhat hard as a player because you're in the game, you just want to play. But I feel like I kind of, from once again the veterans, I did a really good job at managing the game. So I didn't really have to realize it. They made the adjustment, you know, just talking to me personally and telling us, you know, they have 10 men, you need to do this, stay up higher, stuff like that. So after they said that, I realized what, you know, they have 10 men, I can stay higher up the field. I don't have to come back as much to get the ball there. And, yeah, they tried to find little pockets, and it was working out because, you know, they had 10 guys. So I knew they were going to sit back. I've played against 10 men before, and it's very tough when they have just – five in the back and, you know, the other up top. So it's always tough to break that down, but I know that there's no need to, you know, just be patient. There's no need to force it and rush it. So, you know, and there was times where I didn't touch the ball as much as I wanted to, but that's another way I have to work through it, and that's why you have to find little pockets and stuff. And even if they have, you know, five guys back, you still got to break them down. And that's an adjustment I think we did really well in the second half to make, because in the first half, I guess, we played a little slower than we wanted to, but the second half we really moved the ball and we found little spaces and pockets to create stuff.
All right, we're here with Gianluca Busio. Man, you were inches away from a golazo, too. I mean, you know, we're talking about the assist and it turned out great, but boy, that shot you had in the first half, when you struck it, did you think this has a chance to be one that no one's going to forget?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, when it came off my foot, I had a clean connection with it, and I thought it had a good chance of going in. Either it was going to make goalie have to make nice saves going in or hitting the post like it did. But yeah, just when it came off my foot, I really, you know, felt the contact I made with it, and I thought this had a really good chance of going in. Unluckily, it didn't, but yeah, I just kind of went for it and it worked out decent.
Now you've been a top prospect for some time, so I know you've had the spotlight on you for a little bit, but it seemed like after this game, you really blew up on social media and stuff like that. Was there any cool things that have come across after this game? Any cool reactions that you've seen?
I don't know about cool reactions. I haven't really pay attention, I guess, that much to what other people are saying. You know, I mean, I'll occasionally look, you know, just I get tagged and something like that. But yeah, I don't really pay attention as much. But, you know, there's always some you know, some nice things being said. I mean, bad things also, but I try not to look at those. But yeah, it's always cool looking at, you know, when the MLS is, you know, tweeting your name and, you know, saying what a great assist, stuff like that. That's really cool. So when I saw MLS actually posted about, you know, me, then that was really, really cool for me, because, you know, every time I look at that, I'm looking at other players on, you know, the big time, really big players that play in the league and scoring absolute goals. And to see, you know, scrolling and you see me right on top of it, then that's a really cool and nice experience for me.
I'm guessing that when you get back to the dressing room after a game like that, your phone's just loaded. How many text messages did you have waiting for you? Do you know?
I couldn't count. It was a lot. It was a lot. But it's, I mean, it's all just congrats, good job. And it's all, I mean, I know all the people, all my family, friends, all friends that I've known. Yeah, my phone was really blowing up after the game. But yeah, it's into, you know, it's just, you know, family and friends stuff. So
mom, dad, brothers, sisters, all them hitting you up?
Yeah. My mom texts me right away, during, before, after, all that stuff. Yeah, she was more worried about the foul than how I played. She was asking if my neck was okay.
Yeah.
She didn't really care about the system much. That's just a mom in her. But yeah, I mean, FaceTiming her right on the bus, leaving the game and talking to her because it's kind of late. So we got to talk before she went to bed, and yeah, just saying good job and miss you and stuff like that, just family stuff.
Okay, finally for you, Gianluca, you guys have another big game. I mean, this is how it comes now. Pretty much every game the rest of the season is going to be big, but at LAFC, big names, big city, big brand-new stadium, all that. What are your thoughts on this matchup, and how excited is the whole team maybe just to get right back out to it?
Oh, yeah, we're all really excited. You know, I feel like this win against Houston was really big, but we have to keep on going from it. We can't settle, and we have to keep on moving forward from it. And playing in LA, the stadium, the fans, it's always packed and stuff. So I think we'll use that energy well that the fans are giving, even if it's not towards us. We'll still use it to our advantage. And yeah, it's mainly on how we play, really. LA is a good team, but yeah, we still have to focus on what we do best. And if we play our game, then we can beat anybody, really. So yeah, but everybody's excited to go to LA. Nice weather, you know, some big names we're playing against, and we can really, you know, show them how good we really are.
Well, Gianluca, congratulations on everything so far. Thanks a lot for the time, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, nice. Thank you.
All right, there's Gianluca Busio. We'll be back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this. All right, back to wrap things up on a terrific edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. I'm just going to go ahead and say that myself. My own analysis, Carter Augustine.
I would agree, you know, to pat ourselves on the back a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, Namath and Busio were pretty good, too, but I think we've really hammered it home here today. In all seriousness, thanks to Christian Namath and Gianluca Busio. I thought terrific stuff from both of those guys. And I have to say, some thoughts on acting. When you talk with Gianluca Busio, this kid's 16 years old. You know, we keep talking about it. He was taking driver's ed 3 months ago. The maturity with which he processes the game and the way he was able to stay so composed in a game where grown men around him were losing their minds, I think that I don't want to overstate this stuff and how good this kid's going to be. He's going to have to determine that as time goes on. But boy, you see some elements of a kid who's got a chance to be really special.
Yeah, he's got the maturity on the field and off the field as well. Really impressive interview. And I think it's a good mentality that he has. And like you said, you don't want to put too much pressure or anything, but you feel like he's got a very high ceiling. And it's not just the technical ability that he has, but also the mentality around it. And then likewise, Christian Namath, to hear him coming back and some of the remarks that he made, what stood out to me was when you asked him about, you know, how was 2015 different than a lot of the years in his career? Why was he so successful here? Talked about not only the style of play, but also likes playing in front of the fans. And you heard it from him. He gives it just that he feels like he gave it that extra percentage more, which was interesting. But, you know, a player that can feed off the crowd a little bit, I liked hearing that from Christian as well.
Well, he's going to be playing in front of some big crowds the rest of this season as well. Starting on Saturday, Peter Vermees said that Namath is available for selection in that game. I can't wait. I don't know about you. Going to LAFC, brand new stadium, team with some big names on it. This should be a lot of fun on Saturday night.
Yeah, like we didn't need anything else added to this game. But then both teams went out and made trades for forwards. So you have Christian Ramirez going over to LA as
a couple
well.
Of Christians as well. Yeah,
yeah, no kidding, Christian. We'll see how that transpires. But it didn't need any of that because these two teams are tied on points right now, and they've got a matchup that towards the end of the season at Children's Mercy Park where you feel like these two games could go a long way in determining who's going to finish ahead of one another in the standings. And these are two teams that can score a lot of goals as well. So this thing's going to be an absolute doozy of a game. I'm looking forward to it a lot. The new stadium as well, that's going to be really wonderful to check out. But it's going to be really interesting on the field, and I'm curious to see how it plays out. LAFC a little light in midfield right now. I think Mark Anthony Kay was having a decent year for them before he's out for the rest of the season. Kind of one of those unsung hero type guys. He'll carry the piano while Carlos Vela will play it. So I'm curious to see how they can replace him.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one of the things. I know that, you know, I follow a lot of what Bobby Warshaw writes and says. You know, he's covering MLS now as a former player, and he was a defensive midfielder himself, so he's got some pretty strong opinions about it. But you know, he's saying, look, you don't see teams go out there with nothing but attack-minded midfielders and win things. And right now, I mean, Benny Failhaber and Lee Wynn are kind of playing in that role. Those guys have always been the attacking midfielders, number 10 type players, and they're putting up goals, like you said. They're conceding goals. I think it's going to be a fascinating experiment what Bob Bradley's doing when it comes to that midfield that you're talking about right now.
Yeah, and those two guys, it's great when they're in possession, right? But and Benny can distribute really well from that position at times. Mm-hmm. But when they're not in possession, like you said, those two guys don't like to defend. So, I mean, they'll run around all they can, but they're just not natural defenders. And so I think Sporting will probably look to that area of the field as somewhere where they can really win some battles. And then also LAFC playing in midweek, I think, is going to be a huge boost to the Sporting KC team as well. We have to keep an eye on what Bradley does in U.S. Open Cup semifinal with a chance at making a final for a trophy in their very first season. You've got to think they're going to take that serious in the middle of the week as well.
Yeah, they didn't seem to rest anybody on Saturday, which I thought was interesting because that's the quicker turnaround. Sunday, I should say, when they played against the Red Bulls in New York, they pretty much played their first team from what I could gather, and that's the shorter turnaround from Sunday to Wednesday as opposed to Wednesday to next Saturday. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they decide to do, but I'm with you. In my eyes, your first year as a franchise, go get a trophy. That's something to plant your flag on right away. And they're only two wins away from getting that done. I got to think they're going to put out as good of a side as they possibly can.
Yeah, I would think so. And so that's what's curious to me as well. Against an Eastern Conference opponent, I thought they might have rested a few guys against the Red Bulls. With Sporting being on the backside of that and really a six-pointer in the playoff standings. So I'm curious to see. I mean, they might trot them out three games in a week. You can do that, and I think they'll have a week off after mm-hmm. the Sporting KC game. But if they do that, you would think that some of the guys would be a little tired. So, I'm really interested to see what type of lineup he puts out in that semifinal. Like you said, chance to win a trophy in your first year. That you got to think they're going to be going strong.
I guess I need to check my math because it's the same amount of time between each game. If it's a Sunday, then Wednesday, then Saturday. So it is the same amount of time there. And I think if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan, you hope they play all those guys. And maybe hope for some extra time on Wednesday night as well.
That's the big hope. Yeah, going to penalties is what Sporting KC fans will be hoping for.
Well, it's a big game on Saturday night because the two teams are level on points. Sporting Kansas City have the advantage when it comes to goal differential right now. But so this is a swing game. They call it a six-pointer, and of course that rematch will take place on decision day as well back in Kansas City at the end of the season. So should be a lot of fun. 9:30 Saturday night. You can listen to it live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and you can watch it on Fox Sports Kansas City and the Fox Sports Go app. For Carter Augustine, for Christian Namath, and for Gianluca Busio, this is Nate Bucchetti saying thanks for listening to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show.